Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of subjects in the news. We'll begin with two perspectives on our withdrawal from Iraq that Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri Maliki applauded as a success at the White House, where President Obama spoke of the impressive progress made by Iraq. First, Middle East scholar and Iraq specialist Juan Cole joins us to analyze what this long and expensive war achieved for the United States that appears to have left Iran in charge of Iraq's destiny, and what we are leaving behind in a country broken by a war we waged based on specious claims. Then we will speak with a former deputy director of the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research, the only intelligence agency that told the truth about Iraq's alleged WMDs and resisted the Bush administration's manufactured case for war. Wayne White joins us to reflect on where Iraq is today as opposed to before under Saddam Hussein, and whether this largely defenseless country with deep internal divisions will hold together, presided over by a corrupt and weak government over which the US has very little influence while Iran seems to call the shots. Then finally, we'll examine the apparent self-marginalization of the UK in Europe following the British Prime Minister's rejection of an agreement that came out of the recent European summit. James Cronin, a professor of history at Boston College, who chairs the British Study Group at Harvard's Center for European Studies, joins us to discuss a possible rift in Britain's ruling coalition and whether London's financial center really did veto the European agreement, as Prime Minister Cameron has claimed. I'm now joined by Juan Cole, who is professor of modern Middle Eastern history and South Asian history at the University of Michigan and president of the Global Americana Institute. He is the author of Sacred Space and Holy War, The Ayatollahs and Democracy in Iraq, Napoleon's Egypt Invading the Middle East, and Engaging the Muslim World. He's a regular contributor to Truthdig and the author of the blog Inform Comment at juancole.com. Welcome to Background Briefing, Juan Cole.
Thanks, Ian.
And what's your sense of what is likely to happen with the U.S.'s exit, in spite of all of the glowing words that went back and forth today between Maliki and President Obama at the White House? There's a sense that, for example, I've heard predictions from U.S. security type people that if things go really bad with Iran, which they certainly appear to be heading that way, particularly with the Defense Authorization Act that the president's threatening to veto, that the Iranian-backed militias might strike the Green Zone or the U.S. consulate in Basra. What's your sense, Juan Cole, of the instability that may follow our exit?
Well, I don't foresee that there will be a spike in violence in Iraq itself as a result of the U.S. departure. The United States troops stopped patrolling major cities in late June of 2009. So they haven't been very active in providing security in the country in the past 2 years. This year, with the exception of a few units that did see fighting, and we have lost men this year. Nevertheless, overall and by and large, they appear mainly to have been packing up things. So the Iraqi military has been formed. Maliki is in charge of it. He has deployed it relatively successfully against militias. And so I think that the security situation will limp along pretty much as it has been. There is a determined Sunni Arab guerrilla insurgency, which continues to have some successes in blowing up things in Baghdad and elsewhere. That hasn't been destroyed or rooted out. And al-Maliki probably is part of the problem here in the sense that he doesn't seem very eager to reach out to the Sunni Arab elites. But I don't foresee that things will change radically as a result of the U.S. departure.
Well, it seems, Juan Cole, that there are two schools of thought in terms of some of the intelligence types that I've spoken to. On the one hand, they say, well, the U.S. is actually getting out of Iraq, because at some point or other they expect some kind of a clash with Iran, and therefore there'll be no hostages. And then you have these other scenarios that with the removal of the U.S., the Iranian militias are likely to strike at soft targets like the Green Zone and the U.S. consulate in Basra. Just given the nature of what's in this Defense Authorization Act that the president's threatening to veto, which I understand is essentially going to cut off Iran's ability to sell its oil, which I would think that would put us back to the wall. And we've seen some recent irrational behavior in Iran with the sacking of the British embassy. Are we heading into a period of instability in that neighborhood?
Well, obviously Iraq is relevant to the tensions the U.S. has with Iran. I don't foresee an Iranian strike on U.S. assets in Iraq as very likely. It should be remembered that the Iranians have had lots of opportunities to strike at U.S. assets, and they used to do so at least with proxies back in the 1980s in Lebanon and elsewhere. And they haven't been active outside of Iraq itself in that regard. So I don't think it's their preferred way of responding to U.S. pressures. I don't believe that the U.S., even if it were to cut off dealings with the Iranian Central Bank, can stop Iran from selling petroleum. The Iranians have found ways to sell petroleum to India, for instance, through Russian or Turkish banks. And the likelihood of enough countries in the region and worldwide joining a U.S. Financial boycott of an oil boycott of Iran to really affect the country, it seems to me low. People want Iranian oil. China wants it. Russia is running interference for Iran. Turkey has a policy of good relations with neighbors, doesn't want trouble with Iran. India desperately needs Iran's oil resources. So it may well be that the Congress of the United States can find ways of ratcheting up tensions with Iran from the U.S. side. I don't believe that it will have a deep effect beyond the kinds of effects we've already seen. And I don't believe that the Iranians would respond with direct attacks on U.S. assets in Iraq. There might be proxy attacks, which are difficult to trace back to Iran. But actually... The evidence seems to be that what the Iranians wanted was that the U.S. should withdraw militarily from Iraq, and that ever since it has become clear that that's what the U.S. intended to do, Iranian-inspired or Iranian collusion in attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq declined rapidly, and this was mentioned by General Ray Odierno at the time.
Well, at today's meeting at the White House between Nouri Maliki and the president did say that he was concerned about Iraq coming under Iran's sway and concerned about its stand on Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, to which Maliki said that it's not his job to make such demands on a neighbor, because Iraq was one of the only, I think, two or three Arab League states to not to join in the sanctions on Syria. How's the loss of Syria going to play out in this chess game here? Because you mentioned the isolated Sunnis with little representation and a lot of anger. Are they likely to join with their Sunni brethren in Syria if the Alawites are defeated?
Well, Ian, that's a real possibility, and you've put your finger on an extremely important development. Were the Ba'ath Party in Syria, which is dominated at its upper echelons by the Alawite Shiite minority, were it to be overthrown, and were you to have a Sunni-dominated government in Damascus, especially one, you know, that tends towards the Muslim Brotherhood, al-Maliki and other Shiite leaders in Baghdad are desperately afraid that such a development will give heart to the Sunni Arab guerrilla insurgency inside Iraq. And that's why they are tilting towards the regime of Bashar al-Assad. And this is a new development from about August of this year. In past years, al-Maliki has been strident in attacking the Ba'ath Party in Damascus, and in fact blaming it for everything that went wrong inside Iraq. So there's been a real shift in this regard, and it is wrought up with the Sunni-Shiite dynamics. In fact, Osama Nujafi, who is the Speaker of the Iraqi Parliament and represents the large northern Sunni Arab city of Mosul, recently even actually mentioned the word secession. And I was shocked because the Kurds in northern Iraq, you know, really want to secede. But the Arab Iraqis, whether they're Shiites or Sunnis, have shown a great deal of commitment to the national ideal of Iraq, and the Sunnis above all through history. And one very seldom heard someone talk like this until very recently. But, you know, now you could imagine a situation, it's not very likely, but it could happen, where the Sunnis of northern Iraq just sue to accede to a Sunni-dominated Syria if that's what develops in the neighboring country. So I think al-Maliki is extremely concerned, and the elite around him is extremely concerned by the developments in Syria, because they could affect the situation inside of Iraq security-wise, but even the integrity of the country.
Again, I'm speaking with Juan Cole. He's a professor of modern Middle Eastern and South Asian history at the University of Michigan. He's the author of Engaging the Muslim World, and is also has the popular blog Informed Comment at juancole.com. What's your sense, though, Juan Cole, of what we're leaving behind in this country that we broke? We've spent trillions of our treasure, and the president mentioned the enormous blood and treasure that we've spent on Iraq, but we have nothing to show for it, right?
No, I fear that we have very little to show for the Iraq war. It's not entirely clear still why the Bush administration invaded Iraq. Certainly the things they said publicly are not plausible as reasons for having done it. But the U.S. Not only went deeply into debt to fight the war, because the war was not paid for from the budget, it was all the money was borrowed. So enormous losses of treasure were there, and you know, the press is always saying, well, we lost over 4,000 U.S. troops killed, but that's actually a diminution of the actual sacrifice. It's more like 100,000 troops that were either injured or killed, and the injuries in some instances have been severe. Many of our troops will be in wheelchairs the rest of their lives. There will be PTSD problems, and there will be problems of adjustment. There are homeless vets from the Iraq War. And so, I mean, the numbers are actually much larger. And then the Pentagon, you know, counts people who develop PTSD symptoms after they're back in the States as not having been injured in Iraq itself. And that's, of course, a sleight of hand. So the sacrifice has been just enormous on the part of this young generation that went to war in Iraq. And the rewards to the United States are very difficult to see. As you say, Iraq now tilts heavily towards Iran, and that's a geopolitical loss for the United States and its allies. The original hope of the Bush administration appears to have been that Iraqi petroleum would come online quickly and would reduce the cost of petroleum. This would have the effect of making energy much cheaper, would be good for the U.S. economy, which is hydrocarbon-based, and it might even have been in their minds that it would forestall the rise of renewables, since this was an administration of oil men. But in fact, the Iraqi fields are a mess. The northern ones are old and waterlogged, need a lot of investment to become profitable and to extend their production. The southern ones have a lot of petroleum in them, need to be developed. They are in Mahdi Army territory. Security is still not good. There were bombs going off in the southern city of Basra near the oil fields just last week. So ExxonMobil seems, for instance, to have given up more or less on pursuing its bids in the south and has done a separate deal with Kurdistan in the north just because the security up there is much better. But this, of course, has the effect of angering the Iraqi government. In any case, petroleum is over $100 a barrel as we speak. It's historically at high rates, and there isn't an early prospect of Iraq production lowering that price or having a big impact on the international oil markets. The Bush administration, if it thought it would get cheap oil out of the war, was simply wrong, and they didn't take into account, apparently, that demand would rise rapidly in places like India and probably would offset the new production in any case. So it's really hard to see any positive outcome for the United States from this war.
So, Juan Cole, it's pretty clear that the U.S. costs were extraordinary, and it's also equally clear that those who prosecuted this war have never been held to account. The neocons were back the other day. I noticed at a Republican presidential debate they were all hosting it and asking questions of the candidates. The Krauthammer the other day, I heard him say on television that he said that the Iraq war is responsible, the U.S. victory in Iraq is responsible for the Arab Spring, meaning that somehow by removing Saddam Hussein, the U.S. set off this chain reaction. I mean, what do you think of that? I know what you think, but I'd like to hear your answer.
Well, I mean, first of all, the assertion is ridiculous because if you followed the Arab Spring, of course, none of the protagonists in Tahrir Square or in Tunisia ever instanced the Iraq situation. Nobody in the Arab world thinks of Iraq as a model. It's only in the neocons' warped minds that Iraq is a shining beacon on a hill. In fact, the only time I ever saw Iraq mentioned in the tweeting from Tahrir Square last February was when people said, oh, well, let's not let the regime divide us between Christians and Muslims, because that's the kind of thing the Americans did in Iraq. So Iraq was instanced as a negative example, but never as a positive one. I've done interviews with April 6 leaders and others who were involved in the revolution in Iraq. I was in Egypt and Tunisia this past summer, and I can tell you that that Iraq was never on their minds, that the people who led the revolution in Egypt and Tunisia did not approve of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, did not see what happened there as any kind of a model for themselves. But the other thing is that the neocons speak out of both sides of their mouths, because they're also jumping up and down angry at Obama, and they say that, you know, he's delivered Egypt into the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood. So which is it? You know, did the Bush administration deliver Egypt into the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood? Because that's what Krauthammer's comments would imply. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine that he approves of that outcome. So, you know, these guys, they play a game where they always win. They're frankly extremely ignorant about the Middle East as it actually exists. They're not really interested in the welfare of Middle Easterners, or whether they're democratic or not. They're just out for various forms of political gain for themselves and their narrow constituencies and a handful of narrow-minded billionaires.
And most of them, or at least a lot of them, are shills for the military-industrial complex and the contractors, and they always have been, like Pearl, for example, yeah. So just in closing then, Juan Cole, will any of these people be held accountable? Bush, Cheney, Rice, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, and the neocons?
Well, what they did was illegal in international law, and the United Nations Charter forbids war except on two grounds: self-defense, or a United Nations Security Council authorization of war to prevent a threat to international order. Now, the Bush administration had neither legal grounds for going into Iraq. It broke international law. It broke the consensus of the international community since the end of World War II. It launched a major aggressive war for the first time since the end of World War II. There have been police actions and so forth. But this was a conventional war launched in defiance of international law. They should be tried, unfortunately, the United States is not a member of the International Criminal Court, so they can't be brought there. There are some countries where judges claim universal jurisdiction and where indictments are possible. So George W. Bush just had to cancel an appearance in Switzerland because of the threat that he might be indicted while there for his war crimes. So I think that's the only likely punishment, is that they may be restricted in where they can travel.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Juan Cole.
It's my pleasure to be on again.
Again, I've been speaking with Juan Cole. He's professor of modern Middle Eastern and South Asian history at the University of Michigan and president of the Global Americana Institute. He's the author of Sacred Space and Holy War, The Ayatollahs and Democracy in Iraq, Napoleon's Egypt, Invading the Middle East, and Engaging the Muslim World. He is also the author of the blog Informed Comment at juancole.com. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about one of the people who told the truth to the Bush administration about the war on Iraq.